mansions and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school.
Hi, I'm Jack from Saugerties, and I'm at the radio station with my sister Katie. You're listening to WGXC Aqua. Have a nice day!
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is DJ Var from Friday Night Vibe Session. If you like hip-hop, dancehall, and pop, and we have much more music, we play the second and fourth Friday of every month, 9:30 p.m. to 12 o'clock midnight. Everyone's going to be on their feet. Let's go!
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street, sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is DJ Var from Friday Night Vibe Session. If you like hip-hop, dancehall, and pop, and we have much more music, we play the second and fourth Friday of every month, 9:30 p.m. to 12 o'clock midnight. Everyone's going to be on their feet. Let's go.
The Magic Strangers Radio Show is brought to you by WGXC
from 9:30 until midnight
on the first and second Thursdays of every month.
And if there happens to be a fifth Thursday in any given month,
the Magic Stranger may be there with his box of records to share with all of you WGXC listeners.
So, if you happen to be driving down the road or
twiddling your thumbs out in the wood shop,
give the Magic Stranger a listen.
WGXC needs you. Can you be entertaining and engaging while being informative? Are you interested in all things local? News, politics, and culture? Well, WGXC 90.7 FM is looking for people to host its morning shows, the hands-on community radio magazine show. Our hosts love having an audience, are capable of multitasking, and are slow to panic. No radio experience is necessary. We're looking for diamonds in the rough. Before taking to the airwaves, you will be thoroughly trained and then set free to create compelling radio for listeners throughout Greene and Columbia County. For more information, contact Lynn at WGXC.org or simply send an email inquiry to apply at WGXC.org. WGXC needs you.
Hey everybody, we're the Game Hoarders. We're on every Thursday from 3:30 to 4.
We're invading your airwaves. Come on, it would be fun.
I'm not always there, but when I am, you get to hear my epic voice.
On WGXC 90.7 FM.
Where you listen to all the best music and you can definitely hear us invading.
We're better.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those exclusively of the guest and not of the WGXC host. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Waveform.
Good morning, everybody. You are listening to Jason Smith's Deplorable Radio Show for July 8th, 2018. It is the 8th, right? I believe so. Playing Brock Lesnar's theme song. He made a little news last night. I'm going to try not to get into too much wrestling talk this time. I feel like I kind of robbed our guest last month of some valuable interview time by talking too much wrestling. I apologize to him later. Make some news last night. He showed up at the UFC fight, and there was a little altercation between him and DC after the big fight. Daniel Cormier, right? Yes. Jerry Diamond, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We got a special guest in the studio. His first time on the show. I've been wanting to get this guy in here for a while, and I don't know why I never booked him before, but very funny comedian, Mr. Pat DeBerry, is with us.
You'll figure it out by the end of the show why you haven't booked him in a while.
So how are you doing, Pat?
Oh, it's great. It's great to be here in the basement of a church with you and Jerry. I've kind of forgot Jerry was you're on the show with you. You know, the co-hostest with the leastest.
Yeah, we all forgot about that.
He's like a dark match Mike Buschetti.
Gee, thanks a lot, Pat.
It's a little too inside baseball, but if you're if you're in Hardyland. You guys, look, he's got Mets. You can't see this at home.
You can see if you're.
Yeah, he's got the Mets shirt on, the Mets hat. You got the Boston Red. It looks like each baseball team threw up on you guys.
If you're one of Jerry's two viewers on Facebook Live, you can see what Pat's talking about.
There's three or four coming in now.
Tune in to Facebook Live.
Jerry, tune in.
Because the signal for the radio station just barely breaks the fence that goes around the church.
Hey, Jerry's Facebook Live doubles the amount of audience members we have.
I'm sure. I'm hoping that number gets up to six so we can maybe hit double digits.
We're on a three right now.
Between what we've got watching online and listening. I have a question for you guys. While I was asleep last night, did the state raise the speed limit on the thruway, or do people just drive like maniacs in the Hudson Valley?
Did I pass you on my way down?
You really don't realize how big of a problem dyslexia is until you're getting past the people doing 95 throwing you the finger. Felt like in a little wagon with a broken wheel. I'm getting past on both sides, and I was on the double lane portion of the thruway. And I'm doing a 75. People are maniacs.
It's funny.
And it's Sunday.
Sunday. Wait, I thought I should be in church. It'd be a nice relaxing drive to the Hudson Valley. No, animals out on the road. I almost got run over six times.
It's funny that you should bring this up because one of my questions was going to be, I thought you had some kind of background as a race car driver.
Yes.
You do.
I did. And that should say something, that I was terrified driving down here with these maniacs. Nice. And I went through all these toll booths to get here for this basement show. I thought I had gotten into New Jersey somehow. I wanted to cross the bridge there. It's a $1.50. I said to the toll. I'm like, what do I get for my $1.50?
You get to.
They
cross
flashed me. I'm like, sir, that's not what I was looking for. But I just why is it $1.50 to drive 40 miles an hour across it? People running across the bridge yelling at me. They're running across.
That's my fault. I'm sorry.
Go slow so you can look what death you will fall to if the bridge collapses. My God.
Oh, my God.
So you were a race car driver at one time.
I
were. But are you still?
No.
No. You went from that into doing comedy? Is that what the deal was?
I started racing go-karts when I was 8 years old. And at the same time, I also started announcing the races.
Okay.
And that went from announcing the go-kart races to stock car races all over the state of New York. And, then I drove race cars and, I worked in the motorsports field for a lot of years. And then I left that and I thought, let me go stand in front of people and tell jokes now for a living. And here I am. Yay. Mm. And somehow my career has brought me to... Where are we, Hudson?
Hudson, New York.
We're on a one-way street in Hudson.
In a basement
That's what
of
you
a
guys
church.
Really need more of around here, is one-way streets. I had to take three lefts and a right to get here. I don't understand why. Like, it, you know, it's perfectly okay to build a street that goes in both directions at the same time. They should tell the local constabulary.
Now, one thing I never understood, you called it motorsports. I've never understood how it's a athleticism. I am a sports fan. I'm not a racing fan.
Here's what you got to understand. It's not like driving your streetcar, you know. There's no air conditioning. You're working. There's no air conditioning. You're working. You know, there is a lot. Yeah, you can get worn out. There have been nights, you know, between the fire suit, the helmet, the gloves, the flame retardant shoes, you strap in, you're behind an engine, you're sitting in a little box that's, you know, it's a couple hundred degrees. Yeah. There have been nights that I've weighed myself before and then after the races and lost 7 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's no joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I've always looked at it as, like, things that you can do, like, while you're drinking and things that you can do better while you're drinking, like bowling and NASCAR. Those can't be sports. But
yeah, no. It's
hey, Michael Gregg's on. More of Michael Gregg.
All right, we're up to 5 viewers and 6 listeners. We've hit double digits so far as people are understanding.
Jerry's going to interact with his Facebook Live during the show.
There are people walking by on the street wondering why their cell phone is being disrupted by the weak signal out of a basement.
Jerry, I was about to get into it with you before the show, and then I said, no, I'm going to save it for on the air.
Oh, okay.
You are constantly on that Facebook Live.
Yes, I am.
Yes, torturing people across the universe.
And I just made a little joke about drinking and driving. Obviously, that's dangerous. But you do this Facebook Live while you're driving all the time.
I'm good at something, aren't I?
What would that be?
Driving, Facebook Live. Dancing.
First of all, that's really illegal, so I'm saying you allegedly do this. But, I mean, the proof is on your Facebook.
Do you know me?
I know you, but...
Well, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? This is incredibly dangerous.
I'm a dangerous person. You see my love life. What's wrong with you?
It's so entertaining watching two baseball fanatics yell at each other about driving and videotaping. Fantastic.
I'm down to Jerry Diamond as my co-host. If I lose him, where do I go from there?
The ghetto?
There's a cardboard box in the other room. We could draw a smiley face on it. In the other room, we could draw a smiley face on it.
Yeah, but you can't do a Facebook Live.
Have you gotten in trouble for this? Have you ever been pulled over?
No. You know what? Listen, you ever hear my story about me getting pulled by a state trooper?
Yes, no, I've never heard
yes,
your story.
Yes, we have, and we've only got 50 minutes airtime left, so please don't tell us.
He hasn't gotten it. He's still getting tried. He's never had a fit going across that bridge. Paying $1.50 going across the bridge for nothing? Oh, just for a flash for guy's tits? I don't know what's up with that.
Alrighty.
Hey, read the wall. No profanity, obscenity, indecency on the air. Refrain from that, Jerry.
Anything. I'm good.
You're in a church.
Forgive me for my sins.
Just barely.
Even more of a problem that I have with it is every time I watch it, you plug this radio show. What do you think the name of the show is?
I said Jason Smith and the Deplorables.
Right, okay. Yeah. It's Jason Smith's Deplorable radio show.
Same thing.
Jason Smith and the Deplorables sounds like a cover band that plays nothing but hits from the 40s.
Right.
50s. We're doing 50s.
Why?
Are you ever going to get the name of the show that you're a co-host on?
Jerry doesn't even know if he's awake right now.
No, I don't.
I don't know if Jerry's awake right now.
This is the jersey and hat he slept in last night.
How'd you know you've been stalking my house?
You constantly wear the same thing.
I don't wear the same.
The only difference between this and his winter attire is he puts on a Bills jacket in the winter.
That's right.
I was just going to defend him and say, absolutely.
Thank you.
8 months out of the year, he wears Bills jacket.
Four months, he wears Mets.
But he still wears
the Mets hat and jersey underneath the Bills jacket.
And I make money out of it, too.
You make money out of it? Yes, are you sponsored by the New York Mets?
By
the homeless people.
People see him walking down the street, and they throw money at him.
That's right. Please change your words. Look at this poor guy.
Buy him a cup of coffee for
you poor soul. This is why you can't get a date on a Saturday night.
All right, so you were announcing for stock car racing.
Yes.
Right? Do you transition from that to saying, "Hey, I really think there's something with this whole talking into a mic thing and then you go into comedy.
It sure beats working for a living, I'll tell you that much. My God. No, I always had fun announcing, and I would throw some humor into the announcing. And okay. You've got downtime, you know, in between events or whatever at a racetrack. So, you know, you still got to be informing and entertaining, mm-hmm. you know, unlike Jerry. You would actually have to get your facts right, like the sponsors and the names of things correct.
Right.
Yeah, stuff like that. But, yeah, I've always, you know, since I was nine, I've been talking into a microphone. So nice. I've hosted my own radio shows and all that good stuff, too. So, yeah.
What radio show did you do?
My father and I used to host a stock car racing talk show.
So NASCAR, okay.
Well, no, it was area racing, like Fonda Speedway, Lebanon Valley.
Oh, wow.
All that sort of stuff. So,
would you interview drivers? Mm-hmm. And cool. Yeah.
Driver interviews, give the race results. You know, this was pre-internet, so you didn't find everything out instantly. You actually had to listen to the show, and, you know, we'd get everything. We had fax machines back then.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
It was new technology.
Wow.
Now, was there a way for you to know how many people were listening to your show?
Yeah, because we actually had people call in and talk to us and ask questions.
Okay.
And we had sponsors that actually got feedback, you know, so.
All right. I really have no clue how many people listen to this show.
We got two viewers right now.
Two viewers, my parents.
It's up to four.
I went down to two. The NASCAR thing scared them. I don't know.
I actually find it interesting. I'm not a race fan, but
I never knew about this guy.
Now, do you actually take calls here at the studio? Do you ever give that number out? And do you know how to answer the phone so that if somebody wanted to?
I do not give that number out. No, I have not taken any calls, really. There's a way through my own phone that I could take calls.
Uh-huh. But then you got to give out your own phone number.
Right. So I've only done that for guests. Like, my very first episode, Jerry was actually a guest. He called in
and
using my phone.
And you still got the show. That's fantastic.
I know. I think he's what sold it to them.
I was at Colony Mall. I had people coming over to say hello to Jason Smith and just promote him a little bit there. So that was a mall rat out in the parking lot. I was trying to get my man tan on.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Neither do I.
He lost me.
He's referencing something I don't remember. Well, you interviewed people at the mall?
That's more obscure
no,
than the Mike Buscetti
reference. The first time you called me, I was on your guest on the radio show.
Yes.
On the phone.
Yes.
I was at the mall, at the Colony Mall parking lot.
Okay.
And people were coming around me, and they said, yeah, I'm on the radio. And it's okay.
That's exactly the reaction they should get.
They weren't coming around. They were just leaving the mall, going back to the car, and he's yelling at him like a maniac from his window. I'm on the radio.
I'm on the radio. Turn it on.
He's a special person. Like, just walk around the car. Give him a
They're looking around for his staff member.
Are you one of Jerry's kids? I said, one of them. I'm the main character.
He is Jerry.
Yes. So how do you get into the comedy then? Like, When did you start?
Did you get into the comedy then?
I mean, you go from radio and announcing races. When do you say, hey, I should step onto a stage?
As soon as your marriage goes down the toilet, you go, hey, I got a lot of time on my hands now. I guess I'll try comedy. No, it was something I always wanted to do.
Okay.
Funny story. Years ago, my mom is a big reader, and she'd gone to a... like a garage sale or something, and she found Judy Carter's stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And this was years ago, and she gave it to me. She says, hey, I thought you'd like this, because I always made, you know, friends, family, just like you guys, you know, friends, family, that kind of stuff, made them laugh. She says, I thought you might like this. And I looked into it, but I was so involved in driving race cars and announcing, and it was all weekend stuff. So I was like, how would I do the two things, you know?
Yeah.
And then racing became too expensive and became not as much fun. And when I walked away from that, like I said, then my relationship went, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when I was packing up some stuff, there's that book. I went, oh, yeah, this is something I always wanted to do. So I'll do it. And now here I am. So
awesome. All right, how long ago was this? Was this around the time I met you, or did you start comedy?
Over 6 years ago. Years and like 3 months, or 6 years and 3 or 4 months.
Sounds like that's about the time I met you then.
Yeah.
Cool. And you found a lot of success doing it. Now you're producing shows all the time. You're yep. always on the road.
Yep, producing shows, working different clubs. I just got passed at a couple of clubs to headline down in Pennsylvania, so I'm excited about that. I'll be going to the Comedy Works in Bristol, Pennsylvania in August to do weekend. So
now you mentioned you got passed for some clubs. I know what you're talking about,
right,
obviously, because
right,
yeah. I get passed all the time. But yeah, a lot of our listeners,
no, they pass you by all the time.
A lot of our listeners might not know what that means. So
passed is actually a good thing. That means you got bumped up in the order. It means passed could mean like in New York City, if you get passed to work a club, that means they're going to use you in a club to work in regular rotation. If you get passed to feature in a club, that means you're going to be the middle act of a three-act, 90-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
If you get passed to headline, that means you're going to headline the shows next time you go back. So when you get passed, you get bumped up. You get moved up.
Now, what's the process of getting passed?
You have to be funny.
I would imagine that's the first part.
That's the first part. You got to be funny. And honestly, I have not gotten into any club without a headliner or a booker or a club owner referring me somewhere else. And then once you get in the door, it's up to you.
So. Okay, so it's a little bit of who you know in the business.
It's a lot of who you know, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And I've noticed you do a lot of shows with, I wouldn't say like famous, but known within the business.
Yes,
guys like Vinnie Mark, you
yeah.
do shows with a lot. And
Vinnie Mark, Mike Spears, Dave Cooperman. I've worked with, there's been a lot of guys. Kevin Downey Jr.
From America's Got Talent.
From America's Got Talent. There's a lot of people out there. Now with the Funny Bone clubs in the area, which I've worked at the Hartford, Connecticut one, the Albany and Syracuse use me frequently. I've been able to work with, you know, some of the more famous next level acts, which is always fun. And you learn a lot, you know. You work with those guys, and you do learn. So
how do you make these connections with these guys? Do you find yourself on a show with them, and then you just chat it up backstage and exchange information?
You know, Vinnie Mark and Jody Wiener gave me my first, you know, break at a real comedy club. They gave me a guest spot, and then, you know, they just told me to keep coming back. So I just mm-hmm. kept going back, and as I went, like the first guest spot I ever did, I worked with a comedian out of Pennsylvania named Brad Lowry. Super, super funny guy. He's done little snippets on HBO. He was on Showtime years ago. Really funny guy. And the first guest spot I did was with him. He was a headliner. He actually went with me after the show. We went to a Denny's at like 11:30 at night, and he sat with me there till like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, just talking about comedy. And I knew absolutely zero then, and he took a lot of time with me. So when I started producing shows, Jody Wiener was one of the first people I hired to headline one of my shows. And then there was Vinnie Mark, and then there was Brad Lowry. And as I worked the club for Jody and Vinnie, I got to meet all their headliners that they had go through and, you know, became friends with them. I've been lucky. I've been very lucky to meet the people I've met.
Nice.
And, now a lot of these people, I talk to them on the phone more than I talk to my family a lot of times, you know. But, I've been very fortunate.
And you have a busy schedule usually?
The summer's a little bit slow, but from September through May, I'm pretty much out there every weekend, whether it's clubs or other one-night producers hiring me to do shows or, you know, my own produced shows that I do. You know, up through the Northeast.
Are you building up like a fan base when you go out on the road?
And yeah, I actually am. Believe it or not, I've got people that come to a lot of the shows that I produce regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I got, you know, people on Facebook to keep in touch with me. I actually have a text program. A lot of comedians were building their email database, and they still do. And the thing is, you can ignore email. So I actually have a text club for the different areas. So when I go to an area, I let everybody know to send me a text. I keep their text recorded. And then when I'm going to go back in that area, either with the show I produce or if I'm working another show, I just send them out a little text message, let them know I'm going to be in the area. and then they get out there. You know,
sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, it's a little tougher to ignore a text message, you know.
Yeah.
So
when you produce your own shows, I've done a little bit of this myself. I'm not looking into getting back into it or anything like that, but do you just go into a venue and you say, "Hey, I'm Pat DeBerry. I do comedy. I've produced shows here and there. Well, are you interested in a show here?"
I have like two or three regular venues, and mm-hmm. two of those venues do shows from September through like April and May.
Right.
And we'll do like four shows at the Broad Alban Hotel, which is about 20 minutes from where I live, north of Amsterdam.
Is that the location where I did a show with
you?
Yes. That's a very, very nice venue.
And then there's out in Little Falls, there's a Travelodge out there, and they've got a little banquet room, and I do probably five or six shows a winter there. So they're like my regular mm-hmm. winter rooms. And then there's some rooms that do a once-a-year show or two times a year, that kind of thing. But I go and I look for a venue that doesn't have some other comedy in the area. Mm-hmm. I don't like to step on anybody's toes. There's another promoter in an area. I won't go to that area, but I'll try and find a nice little town where they need something to do. And like Broad Alban and Little Falls, they always come to me after the show and they're like, "Thank you so much for bringing this out here, because there's nothing else to do. And this is a fun night out. And this is like our thing that we do." And they're appreciative, and they support it. So
that is really great, but it sounds like you're doing the exact opposite of what you should be doing. You should be the Vince McMahon of comedy and just step on everyone.
Nah, you know what?
Greatest promoter in the history of entertainment,
there's
probably.
There's room for everybody, and, you know, it's – then you're just diluting the product, and it's not good for anybody,
right.
You know?
I see that.
You want to kind of – you know, have your area and hopefully, you know, you put on a good show. You got to put on a good.
I'm obviously kidding about that, but it's a great idea. Going to places that don't have comedy.
Yeah.
And saying, "Hey, why don't we bring some comedy here?"
Exactly. That's bring the comedy idea. Club to the town. Yep.
Now, if a newer comic or a guy like Jerry Diamond,
sure, throw me under the bus again.
wants to get on like a show that you're producing, like what would you suggest? Hitting open mics, contacting you.
You got to work on your craft. You got to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And the thing is, the shows that I produce, they're professional shows.
Yes.
So for someone who's just starting out, there's maybe two spots on a show. If I'm going to have a guest spot, I might bring in somebody to do a guest spot. But then they've got to have a really, really good 5 to 7 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you can't treat it like an open mic. So I got to see that they have something going on.
And do you really pay attention to this 5 or 7 minutes of a guest spot to see if maybe this guy has potential to come back and maybe get passed in your eyes?
Absolutely. But, you know, it all takes time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you can talk for 20 minutes doesn't mean you have 20 minutes of material.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I do an hour of this once a month, and I have maybe 2 minutes of material.
That's why, and that's why you have Jerry.
get a minute and a half. What?
And then the rest of the time, you're like, the time is.
We have any callers calling in?
But then, no, I mean, I look at, like, you know, I'm out at the open mics, especially in the summer. I hit a lot more open mics than I do in the winter.
Yeah.
And I watch, you know, who's working at their craft, who's tightening up their act, who's editing their mm-hmm. jokes, and who's starting to get some experience hosting. And then that's the only other spot I've got open. But once I produce a show in an area, I usually host it after that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for somebody who's got a good solid 20 to 30 minutes to feature, and then I'm going to bring in a headliner, a friend of mine, that's going to, you know, rattle the rafters at the end of the show, you know? And so I don't have that many spots available, but I'm always looking to try and give an opportunity to people that are up in our area to get out and do something, you know?
I saw you recently at an open mic. It was 2 days after our last show on WGXE. Michael Gregg was my guest that month.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 days later, I go to the Low Beat, my very first time at the Low Beat. Jerry goes there all the time. And I see you and Russ Davignon there, which I haven't seen you guys in quite a while.
Yeah.
So I sat with you guys and we watched the show, and I could see you maybe not taking notes, but really paying attention to who's got
Absolutely.
What on that stage.
Yeah.
And you could probably tell who wasn't a comedian and getting on that stage.
Yeah. But I mean, everybody's got to start somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I look at, like, I was there last year at about the same time at the Low Beat
and saw
many of the same people. And there are some people that you go, okay, they've shown marked improvement. They're moving along.
Yeah.
And there's other people that they've got a little improvement. And then there's people that are just there. It's like their hobby. They're just venting. They're just, which is fine. You know, this is not a career path for everybody. But if you want to get better, you've really got to edit your stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
Audiences don't have any patience for going beyond 15 to 16, 17 seconds before you hit a punchline. You can't.
And then I feel it's not as common, but I feel like even less than the people who get up there as a hobby, there's the people that get up there almost like it's a dare. Like,
yeah.
Oh, there definitely is. Yeah, and we've seen those nights, where I want to say it was at on Lark Street.
Yeah.
At the Lark Tavern, where this one guy, you know, decided he was going to sign up for the open mic and then went up very drunk and did like
I remember that.
And did, no, you don't. I don't think you were there. He did like 3.5 minutes of Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he got done. All right, Jerry, I don't want to argue with you.
Okay.
Then he got done and came off. He goes, wow, that's harder than it looks. And then, you know, somebody, before I could say it to him, said, yeah, imagine how hard it is when you got to write your own material. You know?
Yeah.
There are
those basically moments. Doing comedy karaoke.
Right.
Wow. So the guy that I'm thinking of that really stands out from the last time I went out to an open mic was that night at the Low Beat. A guy got up there and just, you could tell he's never been on a stage before, and he just started talking about how women in comedy are not funny.
Oh, God, yeah.
And this open mic is hosted by a woman.
By Carlisle Carey,
yep.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And wow. Like, talk about, forget about not being able to read the room.
Yeah, all right.
How about not being able to see the person who's gone up 9 times and brought each person up?
Right.
Is obviously run and yeah.
And then he's like, "All right, I'll go up."
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say he has no future in stand-up comedy.
But people like that, it's definitely for the wrong reason. But I find a lot of entertainment in those people.
Oh, it was entertaining. I thought he was going to get killed.
I thought so too. I thought Carlisle Carey was going
to
kill him.
Those guys definitely grabbed my attention. And I'm like, okay, I have to see what's going to happen now.
It's like slowing down at a car wreck. Yeah, that's or stopping to watch Jerry.
Yeah, exactly.
First couple times I saw Jerry, I was under the impression that he was one of these guys. Here he is.
One of these days he may prove us wrong.
One of these days, not today.
No, what I will actually say for Jerry is I'm going to tell this story because why not? He's sitting right here.
Why not?
So one night Jerry goes up, and this is a couple years ago, and Jerry has gotten slightly better. He actually understands and has started to have joke structure with a setup and a punchline. The setups are still way too long, Jerry.
Sorry,
but
I'm cutting them back.
But you still have a structure there.
Right.
This was pre-structure. Mm-hmm. He would just go up and just like talk about his day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went up after him. I went, Jerry, the only way you're going to get better in this business is you just need two things: setups and punchlines.
Right.
I suggested a book for him to read,
and I read it.
Yeah, but a month later, he still hadn't read the book.
Was it a pop-up book?
There were no pictures involved. I said, there's no pictures in this book. What's going on, Pat?
I offered a couple. I could tell a month later he didn't read the book, so I yelled at him again. And then finally he read the book.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And now he even knows, oh, yeah, I have a setup
yep.
and
right.
a punchline. Yep. So you need that basic structure there, and that's
That's why you have open mics. I also watched
a lot of YouTube videos of other comedians, and I see their stuff, and I said, okay, it gives me ideas how to go about doing my set. You know what I'm saying? So it's, reading the book is also a good thing, but also watching videos of other comedians is another, and you learn from both of them things. And
absolutely.
Because not only is it about producing a joke and your punchlines and your stuff and your punchlines, but you also got to be funny. You got to be funny. You got to, like, express yourself. Like, do, like, you know, get the energy to do it.
Oh, you definitely have energy and express yourself.
Well, I know. But, it's all a formula that you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people go up on stage and sell jokes that, okay, they're funny, but there was no energy to it. There was no, you know, excitement into it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, but you make a lot of sense about that. Yeah, I did read the book, and that made a second time. Okay, Pat, I'll read the book. But I also read, like, I was reading Milton Berle's book. I was also reading Don Rickles' books. So I was reading all the combinations of everything. I said, you know, and I learned from that, because comedy is that, like, it's not just, you know, you were born with it. You know, if you want to get into it, because when I was growing up as a kid, I always thought to be an entertainer, you had to be in an entertainment family. You know what I'm saying? Like, your family had to be funny. They were, they had to be on stage. They were doing.
No, that is not the case at all.
But I know that now. But back then, this is what I was thinking, you know. But I see things. I read these books now, and I get into it, and I'm like, wow. Because I hated reading when I was growing up. I hated even writing. But I'm doing a lot of writing now. I write more than ever I had before. As a matter of fact, I was writing at Starbucks, my office, and my teacher came in. My old English teacher came in. She goes, Jerry Diamond. And I go, yeah. You're writing? I said, yeah. Were you writing your obituary? I said, well, yeah.
Jerry, is there a punchline in here somewhere?
No, this is a lot of setup.
TikTok, buddy, TikTok. Come on.
I said, no, I'm doing comedy. She said, oh, my God, really? She said that. Well, if I knew you would be a comedian back then, I would have to do more.
Now, I'm just going to pause right here.
Okay.
And say that Jason and I let you guys listen to that.
Let it sink in.
Let it sink in. See, Jerry just did. His act, you know, punchlines, Jerry, punchlines.
And this was exactly what Pat was talking about. Set up punchlines.
This is a true story. I'm just sitting there writing. I never wrote before. I hated writing when I was growing up as a kid.
Jerry, you already said this. Stop.
His beard getting longer.
You don't want to, yeah. As I'm sitting here waiting for you to finish, it's getting longer.
One piece of advice that I picked up in comedy that maybe I should pass on to you is your focus when you first step up on stage is you want to get that first laugh within the first 11 seconds of you being on that stage. I don't know why it's 11, but
this
is something that I had learned. And
I've been fortunate because of the headliners that have pulled me aside, much as I've done to Jerry,
mm-hmm.
and bashed me over the head and go, yeah, that joke's okay. But you, like a headliner told me, headliners don't meander up to punchlines. You got to get to it.
Yeah.
You don't have any time. Audiences are unforgiving. You can dig a hole for yourself if you're not to your first punchline, like you said, in 11 to 15 seconds or whatever.
Yeah.
You're done. Now you're
that's
in a hole.
That's when the crowd is judging you the most.
Absolutely.
When you first step up there.
As soon as your foot hits the stage, they're looking at you going, all right, well, look at this guy. He's got on a Mets hat. He must be an idiot, you know.
But if you can get them to laugh right away, yes, they're in.
You got to break the ice right away. Yeah.
So let's break that ice, Jerry.
I don't want to fall in.
Okay.
We'll tell you this again in a month.
I know.
So what other kinds of advice could you give a comedian who's struggling?
We're all struggling.
Yeah.
We're like, no matter what I figured out is no matter what level you're on,
mm-hmm.
there's always a level above you want to get to.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I legitimately know guys that I feel like are on the brink of being famous,
mm-hmm.
and they're so much funnier mm-hmm. than people you see on the stand-up shows and on TV, but they just haven't been noticed yet. So we're all struggling. Nobody's like crushing it. If they're crushing it, they're guys that are named Kevin Hart, Kevin James.
Yep. Even at that level, yeah. I think they always want more. I mean, Kevin Hart's as big as you can get, selling out football arenas.
Right.
And
but the thing is, you know, the thing that's admirable that I feel is about him is he's trying to reach back mm-hmm. and put, you know, like he's got that show, what's it called, the next
level. Yeah.
Next level.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And that illustrates what I'm talking about right now. That's the point. He's reaching down to try and help the next people up to the next level.
Right.
And that's, I don't know any other way you get ahead in this business. You can't, you know, there's nobody who can legitimately say, oh, I did this all on my own, because there's always somebody along the way that Kevin James, before Kevin Hart was Kevin Hart, he was just another comic that nobody knew. Somebody had to reach back and go, all right, come do this show with me, open for me. Mm-hmm. Or you know what I mean? There's nobody that's gone, name somebody who's gone all the way to the top. They all had to start at an open mic.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Jerry Diamond.
No, no, stop. No, let's not even start that now. Get me all wound up on Facebook here. Easy now.
But the thing is, that there are things that even, like Jerry has a step up on some other, we break his, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I wouldn't have him as a co-host.
It's all in good humor.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there are people that are just starting out that look at Jerry and they go, Jerry has energy when he goes on stage. You got to give him that.
Yeah.
He's got energy when he goes on stage. You can't help but not notice this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And he works hard.
He has
Some
a character.
The same thing.
He
Some
works at it. He writes.
There's no denying There's no denying that he works at what he does.
Absolutely. So he's on a level that other people are going, well, geez, how do I get to be on a radio show with Jason Smith in a basement in Hudson?
Be a Mets fan, a Buffalo Bills fan.
You know, so it's just all about. So you asked for advice, and I took a Jerry path and went all the way around. The advice I would give is keep working on your craft, keep writing, keep editing, and be ready for when the opportunity comes. Because if you're not ready when the opportunity presents itself, you're going to fail.
Yeah,
and then you got to get back up and you got to try again. So. Don't put the cart before the horse.
Nope.
Don't bite off more than you could chew. The thing that annoys me is when I see the showcases that the local comedians are doing.
Yeah.
And they're all good, but they're burning through 6 or 7 decent, like, host or guest spot type spots and putting that together as a show.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not a really good quality show. And now, the worst thing that can happen is you have a really good show. Now, what do you do next month when that venue says, oh, yeah, come on back and do another? Do you bring the same 7 people out? Well, now you can't. So now you got to go and you got to go, well, I brought all the what I thought were the best people. So now what do I do?
Right.
Now you got to go to the next level. And now you got to bring 9 of them because they only have 5. It's a vicious cycle. You got to.
Or you could go in the other direction, actually start booking middle acts and headliners.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. You got to have somebody, you got to have a professional on the show or 2 on the show that really blow it out.
Yeah.
Or else people feel like they got cheated. And that doesn't only hurt those people. It hurts everybody else in the community because now people go to a show and they go, well, I mean, they were okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one guy was pretty funny for a few minutes, because that's the level they're on. And then they go, yeah, but if that's comedy, I'm not going to go, you know, and then that hurts the other venues.
Right.
You know, I mean, we have a comedy club at the Cross Gates Mall, right? It's an A club.
Mm-hmm.
We have a comedy club in Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice venue. It's a great club. And they've had big acts go through both those clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why you would do a show around the corner or under the same roof as one of those venues. What are you doing? You know, that doesn't seem like a smart move to me. Because if I were running that club or that venue, or if I was the owner or the manager, and I see here's a list of people doing a show around the corner.
Yeah.
Well, now here's the list of people I really can't use in my club because locally they already went over there and saw them. So now they're not even a draw to me. You know what I mean?
That's a good point that I never really considered.
I never considered that.
I've always looked at it as if you're doing shows in the area, hopefully that manager of the A club catches wind of that and sees your name, and now you're on his radar. And he,
yeah, but you're probably on his radar for the wrong reason. You know, unless it's a really good product.
Yeah.
If it's a really good show with a real headliner, and it's not across the street from his club, that's, you know, probably not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Or under the same roof as the club.
Now, do you think clubs look at open mics that way? Like,
no, because okay. open mics are the workout room. That's the it's the training gym.
Okay,
it's the, you know, it's the place where you learn to take your bumps
and maybe
and come
that,
off the ropes and do, you know, that's
maybe that is where you could get on their radar for the right reason.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. You know that, and that's something else. You know, some other local comedians have talked to me about, and they said, well, we're thinking about putting on a show at this venue. I go, why don't you do an open mic at this venue?
Yeah.
You know? And now it's an open mic, and people understand the difference between an open mic
right.
and a show. Out in my area, there's somebody who did a free comedy show with, like, 7 comics on it, and now 2 weeks later, they're doing a fundraiser, which is great. Raise mm-hmm. some funds for a good cause, but there's 4 out of the 7 are on that show, and now it's a show that people got to pay to go to.
Right.
And it's literally, I'm going to say, within a mile and a half of the previous venue.
Right.
So you did a free show 2 weeks ago, and now you're going to do a paid show 2 weeks after.
I see your point, but I also see... I see how that could be a good thing because they're actually raising money for a cause.
Yeah, and
you know?
I'm all for that. You know, yeah. that's a good thing. Raise money for a cause. But if you knew you were going to do that show, don't do the free show 2 weeks before.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, they're right back to they got 7 or 8 comics on this show. And I would rather see them have a real show with a real headliner and really do a good job and blow it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that when my shows come up in the fall at the Country Club or the Broad Auburn Hotel or whatever, they go, oh, yeah, we saw a great comic. We're going to go to this one now.
Yeah.
I'm afraid they're going to go to this one and go, oh, it's all right, you know, but, you know, well, there's another show coming up. Well, you know, we did that last over the summer, so I don't know if we want to, you know, it wasn't, they weren't really inspired to go.
Right.
You know, that's my fear.
I feel like you're making some great points here, and I actually feel like even at my level, I'm learning something.
I am too. We all. I mean, what's the learning experience? Well, it's a learning experience. You know, you learn from all this stuff. You want to have a comic that's been around, that's been doing all that stuff for quite a while, and he knows the ins and outs of things, and he knows what's good, what's not good, and for business, you know, and he makes a lot of points there, and I'm really, I'm impressed. I really am.
I got my start in comedy through a comedy workshop. Have you ever put any thought into doing a Pat DeBerry comedy workshop?
Yeah.
Somebody recently talked to me about that, and we're thinking about maybe doing something next spring.
Nice.
But we want to do it in a way that it's helping new comedians and open mic comedians kind of get their start,
mm-hmm.
learn some of the basics. But we're still just in the discussion stage right now, you know?
I think it'd be a great idea for you if you have the time. I know you're probably a very busy person,
we
all are.
I'm a professional stand-up comedian. I have nothing but time.
Is comedy all you do now? Or?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Good. This is my gig.
That's good.
That's what I was working for at one point.
I make a living. It's not a good living. And I have certain advantages to my situation, but you know, I got a long way to go before I can. I mean, right now, like I said, September to May, I'm in good shape.
Yeah,
I save as much money as I can so I can get through the thin months of summer.
Right, because it is kind of a seasonal job.
And there's a couple little part time things I do on the side, especially in the summer to get through. But
now, do you treat this like a full time job? Or are you working 40 hours a week?
Well, I have a daughter that I take care of daily, especially, you know, when she's off from school. But, you know, I dedicate time to writing, sending emails, making contacts with other comedians or bookers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always emailing, texting, calling, or you're writing, listening back, watching your stuff. And that sometimes is the hardest part I found for a lot of comedians, to listen to themselves.
It's the hardest part for me. Yeah,
it is.
And it's.
I know I'm on the radio, but I hate my voice.
It is a
it is necessary.
Yeah.
Because the things that you don't like when you listen back are the things you got to eliminate.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, I can't tell you how many times I've done a set somewhere, like when I was doing sets for Jody and Vinny, and I record it, and I listen to it on the way home. I had an hour drive home. I'd listen to it over and over again and go, why did I say I don't need these four words here?
Right.
Oh, my God. I would be, oh, my God, get to the punchline, that kind of thing, and still wouldn't learn the lesson until two more sets later and go, oh, yeah, I got to take this out. You got to listen to yourself. You got to.
Now, Jerry, do you record your stuff, and do you listen back to it?
Well, here's the thing I was going to ask Pat, because I was told by other comedians that you should record your set.
Absolutely.
Don't listen to it right away. Wait about a week or so before you listen to your set.
Why?
Because, I don't know. That's why I want to know why. Because I heard you say this now, that you should record it.
I record it. I get in the car. I plug it in. I listen right back to it. And then I'll listen to it. Sometimes, depending on the length of the drive, I'll listen to it two or three times on the way home.
It would make more sense to me to listen to it right away because I don't do it. I mean, sometimes I record myself and I never listen to it. But after a set, I make mental notes. And so it makes sense to me that if you're going to listen back to your set, you want to make sure your mental notes line up with what actually happened on that stage.
The way my process is I'll listen to it right away. And then when I go to sit down at the place that I like to write, I'll listen to it again then, or I'll watch it if I videoed it. And then I make my notes, and then I pick out the jokes that I'm going to edit or rewrite or throw away, or not necessarily throw away, but tuck into the file that's on the shelf.
Do you ever find a joke that while you were on stage telling it, you feel like this joke is killing? And then you listen back to it, and it wasn't what you thought?
You know what? As silly as it sounds, it also depends on where you record from.
Okay.
I've set up my video camera in the back of a room, and then you can get, the feeling of the crowd to the stage and that. And then I've set up my audio recorder in the back of the room, and you can't hear anything.
Hmm.
Then I put it next to me on the stool. And get a better feedback because, that's what it sounded like on stage. It can throw you off.
Okay.
You know? But, it all comes back to editing.
Yeah.
You've got to get to it as quickly as possible, And I've had people, ask me about that, and I pointed to a joke years ago that I don't even do anymore. I literally took one word out of the setup and got a much better reaction. So anytime I talk to a new comedian and I say to him, if you're getting any kind of a reaction, any kind of positive reaction from a joke, edit that joke down.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you tighten that joke up, the reaction becomes bigger.
Hmm.
As soon as you get to a question, Rich Williams.
Yes.
Great area comic. He's a big plus to the area.
Yes, he is.
He told me, and I think he did it one time when he was doing one of his seminars up at the Comedy Works. He told me, he says, the writing in two color inks.
Yep.
And I said, what do you mean? He says, you write your setup in one color, you write your punchline in another color.
Hmm.
So now I know if I'm writing a setup and I get out to about 2.5 lines of handwritten, I know that if I get three lines, I know that's too long because now I'm up in the 15, 16 second bracket. Now I got to go back and look at that and start eliminating. And you look back and you go, oh, yeah, I'm repeating myself here. I've used the same word. I got to take that out, or I don't need these three words at the beginning of this sentence. I could just jump right in here. And I told that to Brad Lowry, who's been doing comedy for almost 30 years. And when I told him that, he went, oh, my God, that is awesome. And now he does it. So you're
always learning in this business.
Yeah, you're always learning. The minute you stop learning, you're done.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's why I learned about the comics, how do you do their stuff? And they, like you, for instance, you taught me a lot. And, and I appreciate that, and especially what you did the color ink there. I think, Rich one's the same thing.
Yeah.
Do the one color, then your punchline's another color. I said, wow, that's pretty amazing. And I tried that.
But now I take that a step farther. And the reason why I know three lines is 15, 16 seconds is because I'll get my phone out and I'll put the stopwatch function on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll read that. I'll press go and I'll read that in my head at just a normal pace.
Yeah.
And then I'll hit the lap timer at a punchline and then wait, and if there are multiple punchlines, and then you can look back and see how long it's going to take you to say those words at a normal pace. All right, obviously you can't, if it hits, you know, you're going to have a pause, but just at a normal pace, how long is it taking me to get to the next punchline? And if I'm if I get 15, 16 seconds, mm-hmm. that scares me, especially if a joke I'm going to use early in a set. If you get to the middle of a set, you can sometimes get away with a little bit longer setup because you've earned the audience's trust that you're funny and you're going to, you know, okay, you got to wait a couple extra seconds, but there's a payoff here,
yep.
you know. But you got to start out quick and you got to finish quick.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I feel like this is a very educational show.
It is very educational.
Tuning in.
You know,
for the five people that are listening.
For the five people, if you're a comedian. The time's flying by, as it always seems to. You got shows coming up?
I do. I'll be headlining at the Norwich Elks on July 28th. Then on the weekend of August 10th and 11th, I'll be at the Comedy Works Bristol, Pennsylvania for that weekend. And then I've got a bunch of things coming up in September and October, but the dates haven't been solidified yet. So,
do you have a website where these dates might be listed?
I do. It's called comicpat.weebly.com. So comicpat.weebly.com.
Okay.
So good to know.
People
can
find you on there?
If you're just discovering me, you can friend me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff.
And it's just Pat DeBerry?
Just look for Pat DeBerry. D-A-B-I-E-R-E.
All right.
There you go.
There you go. Jerry, you're on Twitter and all that stuff.
No, I don't do a Twitter.
You don't do Twitter?
I don't do Twitter.
Okay. All right, now hang on. Here's another little piece of advice I'm going to give you. If for no other reason, you should be on Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. And you should do nothing but write jokes on Twitter.
All right.
It used to be a very helpful tool.
Yeah,
I don't know if it still is.
But it's even at 280, that's you know, that's still pretty good. But you should be on Twitter writing jokes on Twitter.
All right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you got followers or not because there's a framework. There's a constriction there.
Yeah.
It'll help you shorten your stuff down.
Right.
Matter of fact,
it helps you get to the point.
Yes. You should try to write two jokes per tweet.
Okay.
Two jokes per tweet.
That's what he should be doing. Yeah. Absolutely.
I spend my time writing, and I go through my stuff there. And like I said, now you just gave me that a good advice that I should listen to my set right away. Because I generally like about a week or two before I listen to my set, you know?
No, listen to it right away. There's all nothing right. stopping you from listening
a week or two later,
but listen to it right away and be your own worst critic.
Right. Well, yeah. I had that.
Another thing a headline comedian told me is you have to accept the verdict of the audience.
Oh, I have.
If the audience isn't laughing, there's something wrong with the joke. Either it's a weak joke or it's taking you too long to get to the point. It might be the greatest joke ever.
But it took too long getting there.
But it's too long to get there. Right. You know, if you're getting any kind of a reaction, even a little bit of reaction, tighten it up. It'll be much better.
Right. Oh, well, I did some. I've been doing it. I've been like cutting things out. And I listen to your advice and everything. I go with different routes. And I listen to other comedians. On YouTube.
You should be listening to Mitch Hedberg.
Mm. Oh, yeah?
That's who you should be listening to.
Okay. Why is that?
Because that's what you need to get to.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be your style.
Okay. Jerry, where can they see you?
I will be...
Jerry will be in the parking lot of the...
Colony
Mall. WGXC 90.7 FM parking lot.
I'm actually in the Boston Festival competition next Thursday at the Comedy Works.
Oh, nice. Good luck with
that. You're there Thursday night?
Thursday night.
Make sure you go Thursday night.
Make sure you go Thursday night.
Because you won't be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or...
Unless I bring Pat the Bear as my sidekick. I said, I need a dummy. Can't Pat the Bear.
you can follow this show at Deplorable Radio on Twitter. Look us up on Facebook as well. I don't even know.
I've also hosted a show at the Hudson River Coffee Shop.
The exact address
is the 21st of this month as well, with Ed Smythe.
Hudson River Coffee Shop up in Albany?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm hosting a show there.
And you can probably catch me tomorrow night at the Lark Tavern. I haven't been there the last couple of weeks, but I've been trying to get back into it a little bit.
When's the last time you've been to Lark Tavern? It's been a while since you've been to Lark Tavern, haven't you?
I was there not too long ago.
Yeah.
It was like May?
Come out there because there's some other new comics out there, and I think they're pretty funny. I mean, I want to get your opinion on them, too. I mean, to see what you're, you know.
Well, we're going to have to do that off the air, Jerry, because we are wrapping this up in honor of...
This should be a two-hour show.
It should. In honor of you doing the tryouts for the Boston Comedy Competition, let's go out with some Boston.
All right.
On WGXC. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next month.
Thank you for tuning in on Facebook Live. Love you guys. Take care. Keep smiling.
Bye one listener.